Springbok Radio proudly presents Tales from the Seven Seas. Stories specially written for this series by Annette McKenzie and Jack Mullen, and introduced by Hamish McLeod.
While we often read about the great epics of the sea and the many heroic sacrifices which have been made, there are countless sacrifices which never find their way into the history books. And sometimes, a man who in the eyes of the world is a failure carries within himself the memory of one unacknowledged, unselfish deed. One act of sacrifice which, if it were known, would mark him as a hero. My story tonight starts in the year 1840 in the seaport town of Great Yarmouth, where a young couple had only 10 days previously exchanged their wedding vows. But there had been no family celebration of the marriage. No, for Beth Greenwood had disobeyed her parents and run off to become the bride of her young and dashing sailor lad, Harry Fairfax. I've called my story The Locket.
You look so solemn, Beth. What are you thinking about?
I was thinking about this inn. How I remember it. When you're gone, if ever the loneliness becomes too much for me, I remember how happy we were.
You won't have to live on memories. I'll only be away a little while. It goes so quickly, I'll be back before you know it. It'll hardly seem as if I've been away at all.
I'll be counting every minute.
You still but King Solomon said, we can't have that. Maybe this will cheer you up, eh?
Locket, Harry.
You like it?
It's beautiful. Oh,
let me fasten it on for you.
Oh.
Now, I want you to know that this isn't just an ordinary locket. There.
It's the most beautiful locket in the world. Because you gave it to me.
Oh, no, that's not what I meant. You see, this locket is a sort of talisman. And you must wear it always because every time you touch it, or you look at it, you'll know that wherever I am, I'm thinking of you.
Harry, you should not have to go.
Hey, do you love
me? You know I do.
The innkeeper said we'd find you here.
Deceitful, ungrateful girl. That a daughter of mine could even think of such a thing. To run off with a low, common, good-for-nothing sailor.
Mother, please.
I never thought I'd live to see the day.
I'll thank you to speak more civilly to my wife, Mrs. Greenwood. I want no quarrel with you or your husband, but I'll stand for no insults. So just guard your tongue.
I think I'm entitled to speak to my own daughter.
Only with her husband's permission.
You may call yourself her husband, but I've another name for a man who entices a 17-year-old girl away from her home and her parents.
He didn't entice me away. I love him, Father.
Oh, Beth, why didn't you confide in us?
Because I knew you didn't approve of Harry. So I had to run away.
You've ruined your whole life. You're married now. There's no turning back.
I don't want to turn back. I love Harry, and he loves me.
For how long? And what sort of a husband is he going to make you?
Would you stop talking as if I wasn't here? I know that I'm not good enough for Beth, but she's my wife now. She's trusted me to look after her, and that's what I'm going to do.
And may I ask, How do you intend to look after her?
The best way I can.
But will your best be good enough? How old are you, Mr. Fairfax?
24.
And what have you achieved in life so far?
Nothing very much, I suppose. I was an orphan, you see. I've been on my own since I was 12. I've been knocking around the world ever since, but I never had anything to work for before. But now I have. That's the difference, you see. I'm going to work my way up the ladder for Beth so that she can be proud of me. I'm signed up on a ship leaving tomorrow. Now, the money's good, and I'm going to save every penny of it.
I'm glad you mentioned money. What do you expect Beth to live on while you're away?
Everything that I have is Beth. Here, Beth.
Harry, you can't go with nothing in your pocket.
Nor could you live for very long on that small sum of money, Beth.
It would have been more, except that Harry bought me this gold locket.
And doesn't that prove to you how feckless he is? Wasting money on trinkets when it might be needed to buy bread. Oh, I know his type. They can charm the birds off the trees and his laughter and gold lockets while the sun's shining. But when the sun disappears, so do they. For there's no depth in them.
Harry won't disappear. He'll come back to me.
That I will. With money in my pocket. Money enough so that Beth will live the life of a lady.
Until that day comes, I think that Beth will be safer and happy at home with us, Mr. Fairfax. You wouldn't want her living alone and unprotected while you're at sea, would you?
Your father's right, Beth. I should have given more thought to that. You can't live in lodgings all by yourself. It's better that you go home to your parents until I come back.
Beth returned to her parents' home to wait for Harry. But a month passed with no news of him and no way of sending him news. For the merchantman on which he sailed was trading in the Orient, plying the coastal route from the South China to the Yellow Sea. In those days, letters to or from such distant places were few and far between. So unbeknown to him, his son was born. And Beth would look down at the child and touch the golden locket Harry had given her. For through the long, lonely days, she had come to believe in the talisman. And she could imagine Harry thinking of her as she thought of him. The months continued to pass and changed into years. And still Beth waited. And then her father, who had been ailing, died, leaving Beth and her mother to face the world and provide for Beth's 8-year-old son.
Goodbye, Dr. Stanford.
Sweden, the least you can do is wave back.
Thank you, Dr. Stanford.
Oh, it was a shame to bring him all this way for nothing.
He says little Harry's the healthiest child in the district, but it was a nasty bump on his forehead. It's relieved my mind to have the doctor look at it.
The healthiest child in the district. And so Dr. Sanford rushed out here and stayed for over an hour. You know as well as I do that it's you he came to see.
He's a good friend.
He wants to be much more than that.
Oh, please, Mother.
He wants to marry you. And it's time you gave him the opportunity of asking you.
He already has asked me.
He already... And you never said a word. Beth, you didn't refuse him.
Mother, you seem to forget I have a husband.
Where?
I don't know.
He's presumed dead. You're a widow.
No, he's alive somewhere. I know he is.
Oh, you're not a child anymore. It's time you put all that sentimental nonsense behind you. It was all love among the roses, a few stolen meetings. And what did you get out of it? A golden locket that you treat like a holy relic. And a child that he never saw. A fine husband he was.
He's the husband I chose.
Oh, Beth, you're still a young woman. You could still have a happy life with a home and a husband. And brothers and sisters for your little boy.
I'll always love Harry.
Oh, that's understandable. A first love is different from anything else that comes after. But you can't live in a romantic haze all your life. And the time has come to face facts. Your son needs a father. It's bad for the boy to be brought up by a doting mother and grandmother. A boy needs a man's hand to guide him. And Geoffrey Sandford is a good man. And you're fond of him, aren't you?
Yes, I'm fond of him.
Then listen to me, Beth. You're a mother yourself. And as you wish what's best for your child, so I wish what's best for both of you. Little Harry's a spirited boy, full of mischief and charm. Takes after his father in that. He wraps both of us around his little finger. We spoil him. We can't help ourselves. But it's bad for him. It could be the means of ruining his life.
Mother, I know you love my child as much as you love me. So you wouldn't say this if you didn't mean it.
No, I wouldn't.
You really think it would be best for him if I married Geoffrey?
It'd be best for both of you.
Beth thought deeply in what her mother had said. And she looked at the child and saw his father in him. And for the sake of his father, she wanted what was best for his son. Geoffrey Sandford, as Mrs. Greenwood had said, was a good man. And Beth had both affection and respect for him. So she consented to the marriage. And soon, the wedding day dawned. All this was unknown to a weary man tramping the road. He was an unprepossessing figure, unkempt and ragged, and looking far older than his years. He stopped at a cottage a mile or two from the village and begged a cup of water to quench his thirst.
We want no thieves or vagabonds around here. Get away or I'll loose the dogs on you.
I'm no thief, ma'am. Just a man who's been walking many miles. I'm thirsty. I want water to drink.
Water, you say? Quiet, Bruno. Tipsy, quiet, quiet.
You wouldn't be so hard-hearted as to refuse a weary traveler a sip of water.
Well, there's the pump with a cup at the side.
Thank you, ma'am.
You've been traveling, you say?
All my life.
A long journey. Not a very successful one by the looks of it. But there you are. A rolling stone gathers no moss, as they say.
And they say rightly. At least in my case, I've sailed the world, chasing after a pot of gold.
I thought that was at the end of the rainbow.
More than likely. For I never found it.
You've seen hard times, have you?
Little else. Some of them came unasked for. Some of them I went out to meet. Not knowingly, of course. You think your luck has changed. Maybe it has, but that's the most dangerous time of all. You take chances, you see. Thinking the luck will see you through. But the moment you need it most, it leaves you high and dry.
Sit down and rest yourself for a bit. You look tired.
Oh, yes. Thank you, ma'am. A kind word is one of the most valuable things on earth, you know. That's one lesson I have learned.
How far are you traveling?
Oh, I'm not sure. I'll only know when I reach the end of my journey.
Is there someone waiting for you?
I hope she's still there. Hope. That's the last thing to go. It's about all I have left now.
The she you mentioned, would that be your wife?
Yes, my wife. I left her to go out and conquer the world, but it was the world that conquered me. Many's the time I've longed to go to her, but my pride wouldn't let me. I wouldn't go back till I could offer her the sun and the moon with the stars thrown in.
But you're going back now.
Yes, now, when I have nothing. When I am nothing and I know it. I'm going back. Maybe this is the turning point I've been looking for all these years. Maybe she can show me the way.
Well, I hope it turns out as you want it. Why shouldn't it? The longest road has an end to it. And talking of roads, maybe I can help you a mile or two on your way.
If you're going straight on, that is.
Yeah, I'm going straight on.
I'm taking the horse and trap into the village, so you can ride with me as far as there and save your feet for a bit. And I'm sorry I mistook you for a thieving rogue at first. I can see in your eyes you're far from being that. I'll just put on my bonnet and we'll be on our way.
Ah, it's a beautiful day. Be hot later on, I shouldn't wonder.
Well, happy the bride, the sun shines on. A good omen for the wedding.
Ah, you're off to a wedding, are you? I wondered when I saw the roses in your bonnet. Is it a relative being wed?
No, not a relative, but someone the whole village honors. Our Dr. Sanford, oh, such a gentleman he is. You'd never believe a young man like that could have such understanding of people.
I can see he's a favorite of yours.
He's everyone's favorite. A heart as warm as a crackling fire in winter, and no memory at all for bills when it's a poor man owing the money. There's no one like him. And every unmarried girl for miles around will be envying Beth Fairfax when she walks down the aisle with him.
Beth who?
Beth Fairfax. Why, do you know the name?
I once knew a girl called Beth a long time ago.
Oh, that's nothing to wonder at. Thousands of mothers name their daughters Beth.
Yes, I suppose they do. It's a pretty name. I suppose this Beth Fairfax is a pretty girl.
Pretty enough, but not a girl. She's a widow with a child.
A widow?
She was married once before. We never heard exactly what happened to the husband, but it seems he died soon after he put the ring on her finger, which was maybe a blessing in disguise. From what they say, the man didn't amount to much. Well, her troubles are over now. Marrying a fine man like Dr. Sanford, he'll be a good husband and a fine father to her son. She couldn't ask for better. If there's a woman happy today, it's Beth Fairfax. Well, here we are, and it must be later than I thought. They've all gone into the church. Oh, I must hurry, or I'll be late for the service.
I'll see to the trap. I'll tie the horses up for you.
Oh, thank you, thank you. And good luck for the rest of your journey.
Oh, there you are, there you are. No. You just wait there in the shade till she comes back. Beth, I didn't break my promise. I couldn't come back. I had nothing to give you. But now I have. Be happy, Beth. Be happy.
So Harry walked away from the church, while Beth was joined in matrimony to Geoffrey Sanford. He gave no thought to the right or wrong of the action. It was a sacrifice from his heart, the only gift he could offer, a gift that Beth could never know of. But in the giving of it, the one hope which had sustained him through all his wanderings was now extinguished. Only Harry knew how many wild, impulsive schemes he'd embarked on in an attempt to win that elusive fortune to lay at Beth's feet. Only Harry knew the hardships he'd suffered. But the dream which had sustained him was gone. Like a rudderless ship, his life had no direction. Where the wind blew, he went, both figuratively and literally. For at the first seaport he came to, he joined a brigantine bound for South America. And when that voyage had been completed, he signed on for a lengthy journey to the Bay of Bengal, and voyage succeeded voyage, and year succeeded year, until 20 years had passed. And now Harry had difficulty in finding himself a berth. For he was aged beyond his years, and his health had badly deteriorated. But it so happened that the Portsmouth-based merchantman, the Pegasus, was short of hands and due to sail on the tide, and thankfully, Harry found himself accepted as a member of the crew. The ship was carrying both cargo and passengers, one of whom Harry was destined to meet.
And you say this seaman has a strange fever.
Yes, the symptoms are quite unfamiliar to me. But then I'm only a lowly ship's doctor, not a distinguished physician like yourself. I shouldn't trouble you with this matter, sir. I've no right to do it. And I know the captain would heartily disapprove of my inconveniencing a passenger, particularly you, sir, since we're more than honored to have you aboard.
Please, if I can be of service.
Oh, you're very kind, sir. My chief fear is of the fever spreading to other members of the crew, and then perhaps to the passengers.
Let me examine the man, and then we'll discuss what can be done. Is he the only victim so far?
The only one. And it's my belief he was suffering from it before he came aboard. I can't think why he was signed on. But if the fever spreads throughout the ship, we'll be forbidden to land when we come to port.
I think the sooner I see the man, the better. First, we'll see how the house is.
What do you want?
Your man is there. This is one of our most distinguished passengers, a most eminent physician.
Who's please, kind. Doctor? Oh. Weak. Very weak.
On your watch, Jane. I've seen it before.
Did you say something?
Yeah. On your watch, Jane.
Oh. This, you mean? It's a locket. Belonged to my late mother. A strange thing to wear, I suppose, but she treasured it, and so do I, in her memory. Now then, what's your name?
Harry.
Same as mine. I'm Harry, too. Harry Fairfax.
Yes. Yes. I can see you by the eyes.
Mine's wandering.
You needn't stab him further. It won't last the night. We're leaving in peace.
Is there a danger of the fever spreading?
I think not. I've seen similar cases. Even in advanced state.
I've just seen our son.
I, the emaciated, dying Harry Fairfax, did indeed see his son. And the joy of recognition welled up in his heart, and the tears streamed down his gray cheeks. He died, happy and at peace, with a smile fixed on his weather-worn face. The sight, at last, of his son, handsome and prosperous, was the proof that Harry needed, the proof that his silent sacrifice 20 years earlier had not been in vain. And were it not for the gold locket he'd given to Beth those many years previously, he would never have known who the eminent young physician really was.
You've been listening to Tales from the Seven Seas, written by Annette McKenzie and Jack Mullen. Listen next week at the same time to another enthralling story of the sea. Produced by Andre Botner.